2-hour drive back to his house and 3 hours for me. But I was up there anyways for 2 days because I had other business in town. So I stayed overnight, and Rich came back the next morning, and we had court again. And the judge again said, I want fingerprints. And he says, you show me your Fourth Amendment warrant, otherwise we're going to have a Title 42 action going here. And the judge says, well, I'm not going to give you a Fourth Amendment warrant because I'm not of oath and affirmation, but I will issue an arrest warrant at 1:30 this afternoon if the fingerprints and the picture are on file with the Sheriff's Department. Yeah. And up there, they'll just pick them up. I mean, they'll just go out and arrest you.
Isn't it true that a pro tem judge like that is under oath and affirmation, though, because it's under...
Yes, they are under oath and affirmation. But the oath and affirmation expires, their bond expires, which doesn't give them any jurisdiction. They can issue fines. They can do dog at large, but they can't send anybody to jail. And they cannot issue Fourth Amendment warrants. And the only way you can get personal property or seize anybody is with a Fourth Amendment warrant. So I said to Rich, he says, what am I going to do? I said, well, you're going to go over there and you're going to get your fingerprints and your picture. I said, and then we're going to sue them for extortion. Because they used collusion to get it. And you're going to get all your property back after the fact. I said, in the meantime, do you think it's a fair number, 20, 25 million?
For a contract. Don't want to take too much.
Yeah, don't want to take too much.
I think you get more than damages in common law.
How? For violating your constitutional rights. There are a million people that have died defending our Constitution. There's no amount of money you can ask for to justify having your constitutional rights violated because your forefathers died for that Constitution, went to battle for it. That's
back,
why.
Now you go back far enough in history and look at the term rape, it doesn't necessarily just apply to
man and woman. Anything that's taken by force is a rape.
Yeah, and anything that's taken that cannot be replaced. When they take your rights and violate, they can't turn back the clock and say, well, sorry, we did that. We're not
right. Sure. That's correct.
So then they're basically guilty of rape, too.
That's right.
What, 40, 50, 80 years?
Yes.
Your story is very good. What was he charged with? Did
they
know that?
Rich? Yeah, he filed a Title 42 action on the judge because the judge denied him his children for 4 years. Took away his parental rights with no cause. And he fought and fought and fought for 4 years and kept bringing motion upon motion upon motion until he ran into me and ran into this procedure and then dropped the 42 on him. And then they fought back with their own 42s using the same material. But they were unjustified. And now these are before the federal court for decision also. Now any federal judge that touches a Title 42 of these caliber becomes part of them. They either have to convene a common law trial by contract because you paid $120, the disclaimer is on the document, and you have your flag on your document. That flag can't go anywhere but into a common law. No matter where that flag goes, under Army Regulations 840-10, Chapter 2-1 has jurisdiction. They carry that piece of paper into a courtroom, and that admiralty flag's there, that document with that flag on it neutralizes that flag, and you've got a common law courtroom at all points in time. And because there's a disclaimer on there, they can't move upon that contract. They accepted it that they would not hold anything in admiralty or do any kind of trickery in admiralty by that, because we have a disclaimer.
Right on the cover of the document.
Right.
Not hidden someplace. It's right out there. It
comes under the title of it. See, when you draft the contract, it's real important here about how the structure and what contract means. You've got, now I don't know how it is here in Illinois, but in most states, this here is the name of the sender. Below it is the attorney of record or who you're going to send it to. This is the sender. And this is the receiver. All right. Then below that, you're going to have your petitioner versus the respondent. Then you divide the page in half like this. Over here, we got our flag speech, jurisdiction. And then up here, we actually put the flag. So we're hitting a multiple level. We're doing it by federal civil procedure. We're doing it by definition. We're doing it by site. We're doing a disclaimer as to the Admiralty, and we're bringing in the Army regulations which disclaims the Admiralty and gives the jurisdiction of the flag up here, and this is our contract. And then up here you write, it's your complaint, and underneath here you write your writ of error. And what is your writ of error? Because you have to be highly defined, is due process violation to the Fifth Amendment. Broad day shotgun pattern, and then you get in down here where you're going to do your verbal disclaimer that you swear to tell the truth. And right below, well, here you put the title. You'd be, this complaint is for a writ of error. That would be your title across here. And then below that, you're gonna swear to tell the truth, okay? And then below there, then you get into your facts, your case. Now, the facts of the case are found on the section number 1 of the complaint writ of error in your paperwork there. Now, how that's laid out. Now, a fact has to be brought. Am I going too fast for anybody? You got number 1. You got a fact. It's going to be brought by a federal rules of civil procedure. You got to tie it to that. If you can't make a fact tied to a federal rules of civil procedure, it's not a fact. It's either got to be a 12B7654321 or a 9B fraud. It doesn't qualify in that out of those 8 or a 10A nom de guerre. Well, 10A nom de guerre is also fraud. So you're going to be bringing that one in too. Now, once you've established that particular fact, remember, preposition, noun, verb, then you're going to be to, you're going to get into your title, whatever under United States Code. 3, you're going to join your title to your injury. Now, what is an injury? An injury is anything that's constitutional. 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, all your constitutional injuries. You're either going to have a no warrant, due process, didn't have counsel, right to trial, cruel and unusual punishment under an 8th.
Excessive bail, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. If it's a constitutional injury, you then bring that in. But when you do this here, when you name this injury, you got to go through, under United States Code, it's going to be under a title. Title 42, USC 1983, at Chapter 21. Chapter 21 is the only place where you're going to get money damages. And Chapter 21's got 998 sections in it, I believe. It's a little light reading for anybody that wants to spend a few months.
Do you have to read the chapter backwards?
No, you can use note 3, you can use note 39 by itself in chapter 21. 319 and 337 is your policy and custom. Those are all outlined in your papers with definitions. And 349, 50, 51, 52, and 55. Now, those are the ones that I have found that are relevant to everything that I've got in my paperwork. The photocopies from titles is in your work. Now, there's two availabilities as far as getting titles. You can either go out and buy the book, which will fill up half this room, or we can get CD-ROM. Now, there's two kinds. They're sold by Gould, G-O-U-L-D, and West Publishing also has them. They run from $39 for the unannotated to $99, and that's a 640 megabyte program to an 880 megabyte program unannotated. And the annotated, United States Code annotated, is a 4 gigabyte program. That costs $2,000. Now that's highly defined. I've got one here, I'll show you. Now, if you have unannotated, now this is Title 18, 1621. You will have the face page here. Okay? If you get annotated, you get 2,800 cases. which will open up probably another 500,000 cases by site number if you want to pull them up. Now, what's unique about reading this section, it will create the will of intent beyond your wildest dreams. It will answer it every which way possible. And you think that's big? That's only 120 pages there. There's 790 pages for mail fraud. That's a gigabyte alone for mail fraud. That's Title 18, 16, 21. That took the computer 2.5 hours to print that at 6 pages a minute. Title 18, 16, 21 is perjury. And underneath that, you'll get your certification for perjury of oath of office. And it will explain in there, in every single case in here, it will say you must prove the intent of the individual and what his motive or state of mind was to cause the injury. Otherwise, you don't have perjury. Now, what they did was, and they did it very cleverly, without outright using the phrase will of intent, they said you must prove intent by a state of mind. They gave the definition for a 9B fraud, and they gave the definition for the will, criminal. But they did not, in any place in 2,800 sites, give you the will of intent. That you had to figure out for yourself. And this goes on again and again and again. Now, what you can also do is you can get you can get Black's Law Dictionary on CD-ROM. Now, if you've got you would probably need a 10 gigabyte memory system with about a 200 megahertz Pentium processor. Now, I understand, first of the year, we're supposed to have 500 megahertz Pentiums available to us for a little bit of speed. My computer has an expansion so it can handle that. And I can also go up to 72 gigs in my computer. I got a real power.
You need 2 gigabyte RAM.
You need 2 gigabytes just to work with unannotated titles, because that takes up 840 alone. If you got Windows 95, you got another 500 for that, and you're already way up to. You're going to slow yourself way down and take you forever to find anything. I've got a compression one in my computer that makes it really fast.
Alpha's out already got 500.
Yeah, there's a couple of fives out there. But what I'm telling you to do here is this. You take United States Code annotated, and you put it in your hard drive, along with Black Dictionary, so that you can access both programs simultaneously into one program. Then you ask your computer to search for definitions and search for word cross-referencings, and it'll flag them off. Now, my computer, let's say I want to get into mail fraud, and I want to pull up extortion. 436 hits in 5 seconds. How long would it take you to read through 1 gigabyte of material to find that? The computer has got the capabilities of 1,000 attorneys with 30 years seniority, all sitting in the same room, and you pop a question up, and you're asking, who knows it? Look at the minds that work there. But you can do that from your home computer now, your PC. That's why we are capable today of doing what we are doing. That's why I'm capable of stand up here, because I've got that many minds in the form of an electronic computer that doesn't make any mistakes, working for me if I ask it a question and to do cross-referencing.
Yeah, what software program lets you access both of those together?
Well, I don't have both of them together. My computer is not yet that big. You're looking at spending about $8,000 to $10,000 out of pocket to put that kind of a gig. You put 10 gig together with a 500 Pentium all in the same time, and then to put those up, you got to buy this stuff too. You got to buy the unannotated version unless you know somebody's got the disk.
Can you buy all Supreme Court?
I don't know.
Yes,
but
we've got them from 47 to 9.
I know that if you contact West Publishing up in Minnesota, they will give you a shopping list of availability, and they've got quite a bit of stuff. And as we speak, every day they are just piling more and more stuff into the CD-ROM stuff.
There's a place on the internet called Pendulum.
It only allows you to access Admiralty. There is no common law since TRIP. It's just like if you pull Black's Law Dictionary out and you look up the word appeal, it's going to say, see writ of error, Supreme Court must take the case, and that's the proper place under common law to see it. Now you pull up 4, 5, and 6, it's not in there. Admiralty got to it and removed it. Now, if you get into a case, and the case says, well, it went bad, and it was an admiralty case, and the admiralty case, the judge was a marginal patriot, so to speak. He was going to give you a trial that looked like a common law case, but he's going to rule against you in the end, so that you don't get too suspicious that you've just been ripped off. And he's going to say, you got 10 days to file your appeal. The word appeal means that I will forgive the judge and the attorneys for violating my constitutional rights at the first go-around, and I will have the case dismissed with prejudice, and you'll pay 5 times more for attorney fees than you did the first time. So it's a point of extortion and money-making and commerce that's going to be predicated and pushed forward again and again and again. So your 10 days goes past, and you get a note from the judge saying, you've got 30 more days to file that appeal. 30 days goes past, and you got, you haven't filed an appeal in 6 months. Would you please file that appeal? Because they're sweating that this stuff here doesn't pop up.
Yeah.
That you're going to find out about the Miller procedure, you're going to come back and sue the guy for treason.
Corpus juris peccandum from section 783 specifically states that appeals are totally statutorial and are created by the legislature.
And citizens have no right of appeal.
And they don't work either. When I did my first Title 42 in the Guardian of the Light, and she said, if Mr. Miller was supposed to come back and appeal this decision, Your Honor, he did it 63 times already. He was supposed to do it again. See, now, I was an appeal based on constitutional violations, which means they couldn't stop me. They always had to guarantee me a new trial, but I couldn't win either. I just kept cranking up the money, you know, the Guardian of the Light, which you get more and more and more and more. It went on for 10 years. So then finally I come back and I drop 42 on him. She says, well, Mr. Miller is supposed to file an appeal so we could get this thing dismissed, not come back and sue us under a Title 42. We don't have any remedy for this. If we don't stop Mr. Miller right now, no judge or attorney anywhere in the United States is going to be safe from prosecution. She put it in writing. And you know what? Half of every one of my legal answers from attorneys make the same statement. They all make the same statement that if we don't stop Mr. Miller before he goes to a grand jury, that no judge or attorney anywhere in the United States will be safe from prosecution based on perjury of oath. And they're running scared. And now I've perfected treason, and I've added treason to it. And that's the case in front of the Supreme Court. So things are going to happen, and we hope they're going to happen fairly soon. You know, another thing, when I was over in Hawaii, RJ and I, when we flew to Maui, we got there, and we were supposed to leave on a 3:30 flight to go to Maui. And it was 5 minutes after 3, and RJ says, this doesn't look good. He says, I don't know. He says, there's too many people standing around in pairs. So they're just getting ready to close the doors, right, on the next plane. We just walked right in, threw our tickets on the table, and got on that flight. And just as we left Maui, I mean, left Honolulu going over to Maui, Honolulu Airport was international, was shut down for 3.5 hours. Now, that might be circumstantial, I don't know. But then we land over Maui, and we're supposed to catch the 5 o'clock flight back. Well, we didn't go to the airport at 5 o'clock. We didn't get there until 9:45, took the very last plane out just before they shut the gate. The airport was shut down from when our plane was supposed to go out at 3 o'clock until 7:30. And they wouldn't give a reason. They were looking for somebody. Then we went ahead. The very next time I went over to the island, same thing happened again. I was supposed to fly out. I kept jumping planes. They weren't my plane. And every time I got on the plane and got out of there, and the computer caught up with whoever was looking for me, the airport was shut down for 3 to 3.5 hours as they went from plane to plane.
How did they let you on the plane without the right thing?
There was availability under standby.
Okay.
I activated my standby status, which doesn't go on. It just lets you use your ticket. And so it says I'm on a different flight when I'm on this one. I was traveling invisible all the time in the island. So I was always able to stay ahead of things. Now, Friday, I went to the airport to go to Philadelphia to file the Title 42. Another one. When I got to the airport, I got there 20 after 7. And I always do e-tickets. Well, the e-ticket, she said, you got your airline ticket. We can't let you on the plane. 7:40 comes along, they button up the plane, and my plane takes off. I got a 2 o'clock appointment with the Supreme Court. I've got to be there. I'm making a big fuss about it. She says, now you got to go downstairs and talk to the girl at the counter. A picture's worth 1,000 words. Now, some of our cases, we've got 20, 25, 30 defendants. You are restricted. Now, you used to have a limitation of 50 pages for a Title 42 action filed in federal court. As a result of my first filing, May 5th, 1995, and the First Amendment was filed July 5th, 1995. About 10 days after the first one hit, it set up a shockwave in the system. We had 400 state judges recuse themselves from the case, including Judge Sheedy running this case through the court with me right in tow. There was every judge in Milwaukee County either locked him out of his courtroom, wouldn't let him in, yelled at him through the door, and everybody got on the phone and started calling everybody else, and Sheedy never got into the courtroom. The second thing that happened was a judge by the name of Stanley, we won't use last names, I had him disbarred because he made a prejudicial remark to me and then reaffirmed it in front of the Board of Inquiry, so he pulled his license. 1995, the same judge, who is still suspended, hears that I'm in Chief Judge's office with 6 attorneys, and that no judge will take the case. Now, the judge who was assigned the case recused himself right out of the shotgun barrel. The next judge assigned to take the case, Judge Sheedy walked up to him, handed him the case, and says, I order you to dismiss this, not knowing that I was standing behind him. When he turned around and the judge says, well, I have to give the defendant or the plaintiff a chance to address this issue, and asked where I was, and I answered, the judge was quite startled that he had made the statement in my presence, which was an obstruction of justice, my standing behind him, ordering another judge to dismiss a case beforehand. So that judge then went, asked for a half-hour recess to study the material. It was 12 pages long. He went back in, half-hour later, recalled the case. And first thing he did when he came out of the bench is he went eye-to-eye with me. Wanted to stare me down. And I sat there with a smile on my face, my arms crossed and that, and I wasn't going to move. This went on for about 5 minutes, at which time he dropped his eyes and said, I recuse myself in this case. 2 of the 6 attorneys stood up, spun around, and couldn't believe the 2 judges in a row recused themselves. And that's when the judge went through the courthouse, door to door to door, and got turned around. He went to all the judge, circuit court judges, he went to all the court commissioners, he went to the criminal judges, the traffic judges. Nobody would touch this thing. Except Stanley, who was suspended. Stanley come up there into the chief judge's chambers, and we're all standing in the foyer, and there's 6 on one side, me on the other, and judges here, and Stanley walks in and says, I hear you got some problems up here. So, yeah, we need a judge to hear this case. He says, well, Mr. Miller had me suspended. I says, well, you can be judge here. I don't care. I says, if I'm wrong, dismiss it. If I'm right, prove it. You know, prove me wrong. So Stanley put his arm up, took the oath and affirmation, signed the document, was handed the case. He then sat down in front of all of us, and we held court right there in the little foyer. He read through, got to page 6. Seems we're finished reading it. Closed it, handed it back to Judge Sheedy, snatched his oath and affirmation out of his hands and shredded it and said, I recuse myself from this case. I hereby recuse my judgeship. He said, I don't want to be a judge when this thing goes off. The case was about suing for perjury of oath of office, with not a single statute anywhere in the document. No conclusionary law, no adjectives, no adverbs, no pronouns. This was a dry one. I won that case eventually, but it's in default right now for the government, and we're trying to get the money out of it. The next, they then conducted a motion to dismiss hearing of this lawsuit. A motion to dismiss is not an answer to a complaint. Once the 20 days goes past on a motion to on your complaint, and they don't answer the complaint, only file this motion to dismiss, they're in default. You go for your FRCP 55.
Yes.
Oh, that's your default judgment. So, and then he has a summary judgment on the default. Now, when I went in on December 7th, it defaulted. December 8th, I went in there and it says, "You guys defaulted, pay me the money." And she said, "We don't have that much money we're not insured for that much." So, she said, pulled the case out, looked at it, and she says, "You're right. We defaulted." The reason they defaulted is because the judge, the attorney, and both lawyers were facing 55 years in prison. They weren't going to allow that thing to go to a trial in any capacity. But the judge messed up because he never dismissed the case either. It was just a bunch of mistakes that everybody had made done wrong. So then the case went ahead, and I agreed to meet with the judge who I was suing and allowed him to sit on the bench on my case. The reason for this was we had an agreement that this was going to be a discovery hearing. I was going to tell him everything that he wanted to know, answer all the questions of how my defense is to be produced for this case, and explain what we went through this morning on the fraud and the jurisdictional power that I had over this court. This went on for about an hour, 15 minutes. I presented my arguments. The attorney general jumped up four different times, yelling that I object, Your Honor, this man doesn't know what he's talking about. And the judge each time told him to shut up and sit down. He didn't have constitutional rights in the sanctuary of the bar. And Mr. Miller, standing there with his American flag, Title IV, USC 1, had freedom of speech and had the floor. And after the fourth time was slapped down for speaking out of turn, the judge says, "You move again, I'm going to hold you in contempt." He says, "And I don't want to put the attorney general in jail." So I had the floor.
So this is what,
then? No, this is in Milwaukee. This is in January 16th, I think that one was, or 12th or 16th, 1995, is when it took place. 1996, that was this year. And when the trial was all over, or it wasn't a trial really, because I was outside the bar with my flag and he was inside the bar with his admiralty. We just agreed to have open discussion, but none of this was legal. We were just playing sandbox now. But I agreed to educate these gentlemen on what it is that I had uncovered and what they were up against, because the $15 million they owed me was pocket change for the $220 million that was still pending in federal court under fraud hearing. So they better pay attention to what's going on at 15, so they know how to fight the $220 million lawsuit. Okay. So, yes. Why not? It's all fair play. If there's a defect, then this thing, someone will see it sooner or later. If there's no defect, why not give them all the answers? There's no remedy for this thing. I've got.
If you're wrong, you're wrong.
That's right. And I've got, I'll bet you there's 10,000 lawyers sitting on these things in the United States in some capacity trying to break the code on this thing, and they haven't done it in a year and a half. So if that many people working that hard with all their computers can't punch a hole in it, I think it's pretty well boilerplate. Now, when the hearing was finally finished, the three attorneys each wanted $18,000 in attorney fees, as they had produced a good inch of paperwork preparing for this case. And that's what they figured their time was. The judge stood up and said, "I don't have jurisdiction, gentlemen, to order Mr. Miller to pay you your money. You're going to have to eat your fees, just like you did at the last hearing, where I didn't have jurisdiction over him." In the first hearing, every time they asked a question to me, I said, I give up no constitutional rights. I don't have a contract with these people under UCC 3-501 to talk to them about their motion to dismiss. I will not give my name to this court because you are not of oath and affirmation, Your Honor, and I am not going to join with a fraud. And he had no authority to take any motion against me. He was just an actor on the, up on the stand there. I knew that. I pulled his license. It expired 26 years earlier. So, when it came all down to it, he dismissed the case. But he was the one who filed the motion for the case, not me. He dismissed his own action, recused himself, saying he never wanted to see this case again. And at which time we kicked it upstairs to the federal court. Now, when they perpetrate a fraud, because the monetary number was $15.6 million, under fraud, you're allowed three times damages. So, that's $45 million bucks a pop. So each person, because there was four of them, brings it up to 160 mil. But I only took actual damages of 78 mil, because there was five people, the judge and four attorneys. So 15 times five gave me $78 million. But that was an actual number that was reasonable based on the guidelines under the word damage. Anybody wants to find out what a damage is, look it up in Black's Law Dictionary and read the multiple definitions and see which one applies to you. Then copy it right out of the dictionary. I mean, it's worded quite nicely. It covers everything you need to cover. Put a dollar value to it. So that's that story. Now, up here, what we're doing is, because there's multiple, here we're only going to have three, but let's say we've got 20 people. Upon filing this one case, United States Supreme Court, in all districts, said, Mr. Miller is absolutely correct. He has a statutory case based on procedural violations. And when they looked up and looked back at what their responsibilities are under the appellate court, in other words, if you violate the circuit court situation and you bring this complaint in federal court, indirectly, it is an appellate court. It's a further, because they're only going to review the procedure of the law. No subject matter is allowed to be brought into a federal jurisdiction. And they saw the simplicity of my case and said, you can only file a maximum of 20 pages now. No more 50, only 20. So how do you stay within your 20 pages when you've got a multiple of defendants? Let's say you've got, like, Rick up in Appleton, 28 defendants. And Carol, he had 26 defendants. And Lysakal's got 33 defendants. We put it in a graph form like this. Now, in the paperwork, I use about 54, 55 different site numbers that fall into a procedure. In the procedure, we put the site numbers down one page, and across the top, we have all the names. Now you go down, and you take the responsibility of each one, but you stay within the procedure. Now, B1 and B2 in your paperwork gives you a procedure of how these things go. These are all jumbled, these are all mixed up. So, going back to what we started this morning, let's take the judge, for instance. You have to establish knowledge with him first. To do anything, you must establish knowledge. I don't care if it's a DA, a cop, or whatever. They're all going to get one, okay? Now, any action that would take place on the street first and then be brought in. So we're going to start with the police officer. He does one. He must have knowledge. If he is without a Fourth Amendment warrant, he is now knowledgeable, and he also is negligent at the same time. So you get the one and the two under an 86 for knowledge and negligence. And then he drops down to a Fourth Amendment warrant is lacking, doesn't have one. So we'll put a three down there. If he doesn't have a warrant, now he's not going to follow due process, which is a four. If he doesn't follow due process, then he's going to be guilty of deprivation of rights under the color of law. So we're going to put a five here. Once he's got deprivation of rights, most police officers who handle domestic calls have a partner. Now we got a conspiracy. So we got a six. We got criminal conspiracy. And we got a civil conspiracy here under 80, 1985, subsection 1. If they do that, if they're now engaged in a conspiracy, now they're obstructing justice, which is 7, and the obstruction of justice, which comes under 15.12. So we'll give a 7 for both of those. Followed by, if they lay a hand on you while engaged in this criminal activity, they enter into a collusion, which immediately initiates a kidnapping under 9, and then they jump back up here into a personal injury of 10.
Should be assault.
Well, that's, you're killing him with 100 years of prison. I mean, you know, it's the guy's going to live forever, I don't know. When he's engaged with all of these activities, he's now certified that he is guilty of perjury of oath. So we'll give that 11. And because he's going to take you into custody and remove you and extort your rights from you, we'll put that for a 12. And when he does that, he also goes up here at racketeering, extortion, 12, both criminal and civil, and he's going to take you to court, and he's going to make sure that you don't have a fair trial, which is going to give you a 13 on a Seventh Amendment, which is then going to initiate a ransom under 14 for fees. The ransom is then going to cause probably if you don't get your fair trial, he's not going to give you a right to counsel either, so that'll counsel and trial will put together, we'll give those both 13. And when all this is said and done, the judge tells you to shut up, which means you don't get equal protection. The one side talks, you don't talk. You violate your First Amendment right to freedom of speech, 15, which also violates your equal protection clause. And that's just because you didn't have a Fourth Amendment warrant.
15.
Well, this adds up to 108 years of prison, because I go through it. 86 is 1 year. 85... civil carries fines, obstructing justice, and these will all end in money damages, and racketeering under an 85 will give you, because it's under Title 42, will give you money damages. But then, when you get into your criminal side, perjury of oath is 5 years, conspiracy is 10, deprivation of right is 10, extortion is 15, racketeering extortion is 20, obstructing justice is 10, kidnapping is 20 to life imprisonment, and then for ransom, well, it just compounds that, collusion, lose all jurisdiction, and all your amendments carry maximum fines of anywhere from 50 to 50 million, $100 million, whatever you want to make them. So it's a pretty sticky thing. That's just for the police officer. Now he's going to take you into court, and the DA is going to, and the judge are going to sit there, and they're going to do this thing as a joint effort, so they're going to do a collusionary thing here, so they're both going to get a 1 and a 2. They're acting together, so they're going to have to form a conspiracy. We'll give those guys a 3. And if all this takes place under an admiralty situation, then we got a 4, because they're going to be obstructing justice. They're definitely going to cause you an injury, but they're first guilty of perjury of oath, because there's no disclaimer, and are working under admiralty, so they both can qualify for 5 years. Your conspiracy on both of these will still generate a 3, criminal conspiracy as well as civil conspiracy. All this is going to add up to one hell of a deprivation of rights. We'll just put a 6 there. They're going to redo all that. They're going to get extortion of rights under, we'll give those 7s. If he denies you any witnesses or evidence in that, then you get your obstruction of justice under 8. If he orders you to go to jail, that also, under the kidnapping here, we're going to give this a Title 18 U.S.C. 4. Okay? These two will go together. Because that's a misprision of a felon and kidnapping. Misprision of a felon carries you 3 years prison, a $500 fine, and kidnapping is 20 years to life. They might make that concurrent, I don't know. Then you got your 1502, which is your ransom. That's your extortion of money. The 1202 is ransom. Title 18, 1202. Now, the ransom down here also qualifies up here for 10, extortion and racketeering. Because if they make the bail so high that it reduces all your personal assets so that you have no money for any kind of a defense, even if you wanted to hire an attorney. to defend you, then you would qualify like up there. You know, you'd be shot in the foot. Through all this, they're going to probably threaten you so they can maintain control of you, so we're going to get collusion, lose all jurisdictions, and that's going to jump up into a personal injury, little 13, and that goes into all your freedom of speech. 14, they got to make sure you can't talk to them. If they send you to jail and you don't, the judge is not a vote in affirmation, can't issue a legitimate Fourth Amendment warrant. If he's going to initiate this, the warrant's no good either. And if he committed the collusion, the warrant's no good either. But they'll still do it. The judge will order the DEO to draw it up. They're going to violate your due process. That one you can include for every single one of these, because without due process of law, the whole thing is Pac-Man. Under that heading. So you start your sentence without the due process of law. See how it all fits now? You got your constitutional invitation, which initiates your collusion. Automatic disqualification all the way down the line. We'll just give that one a one. You got your conspiracy. Not conspiracy. Your right to counsel. Some of you guys get it, some of you don't. I mean, that's optional, but it is sure in the heck going to violate your right to a fair trial. And if you don't get a right to a fair trial, then your equal protection is also contaminated. Now, the judge goes ahead. According to the law, you're allowed $50,000 for each injury. Now, that's required if you're going to file a 1983 action.
Minimum
per cause of action.